from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. If you've been following the news at all, you'll know that George Zimmerman was arrested in an alleged domestic assault where he apparently pointed a shotgun at his girlfriend. Of course, we all know about George Zimmerman and the acquittal in the Trayvon Martin case. I thought I'd bring on our good friend Clint Van Zandt. He's a former FBI agent, profiler, author, security expert, and someone who's been talking about this. Hi, Clint. How are you?
Hey, good evening. Good to be with you.
Nice to have you back on the show. Let's talk about George a little bit. Last time it was politicized. It was hard to concentrate on the evidence with all the political stuff that was going on. But deep down, George Zimmerman is one troubled individual.
You know, you really make a good point. During that whole trial, because, you know, the race card was played so much in it, and you wanted to say, no, this is not about race. This is about, you know, this neighborhood watch guy who took the bridge too far. He put himself in an untenable situation. But then when he did it, it appears he had to fight for his life. You know, we're told that maybe Trayvon Martin tried to take his gun away. I mean, you and I know in law enforcement, somebody's trying to take your gun away, you are in a life and death fight, and you better win or you're going to die. So all that said and done, I thought, okay, I will give the guy the benefit of the doubt. I'll let the jury system do it. The jury system did their job. They could not, evidently the jury could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he actually intended, you know, to murder Trayvon Martin as opposed to trying to defend his own life. Okay, we say that was the situation then. But now we see Zimmerman, Dana, he's acting like O.J. Simpson after the trial. After O.J. Simpson, many believe, got away with not a single but a double homicide, he just couldn't keep out of the media. He kept crossing law enforcement. He kept having road rage issues. He beat up girlfriends. He went to hotels where they're pulling guns on people. And, of course, he wound up in prison because perhaps he thought he could literally get away with anything. And with George Zimmerman, this most recent girlfriend, she said one of the crucial things, Dana, when she was interviewed by a Florida TV reporter, I was on with him on television earlier tonight, the point was that the girlfriend told this reporter that George Zimmerman, the night of the Trayvon Martin shooting, had a heated argument with his wife, that his wife got up and left the house, and then that was the point that George Zimmerman went out and assumed his neighborhood watch role. Well, you think of the emotion that would have accompanied him, this feeling of perhaps he's been disenfranchised by his wife, he's angry, he's frustrated, and he's got that equalizer, that pistol on his side. So, you know, I've really had to kind of, as much as the jury system found out, made their decision and everything else, as you say, this is a guy who can't keep out of trouble. And so, you know, if you do those things now, if we see that in the post-defense behavior, where just like O.J. Simpson, you should just go lay on a beach somewhere and get out of the public limelight. O.J. couldn't get out of it. This guy couldn't get out of it. It makes you question, again, what actually took place that terrible night when that young man died?
Absolutely. You know, looking at the media reports now and looking at them back then and looking at George Zimmerman and the evidence, and we don't know the whole story yet. There's obviously an individual with anger issues. But I want to talk to you a little bit about the gun issue and lots of reports coming out now that he's a gun fanatic, a gun nut, someone with anger control issues. We look at the mass shootings that have been going on across North America. Is this something that needs to be looked at more? Should someone have to bring in a certificate saying they're sound of mind before they can get a gun?
Well, boy, there's going to be far and few between of those certificates issued, unfortunately. You know, I mean, you look at America. We've got, 315 million Americans, about 285 million guns.
Yeah.
I mean, so we are a gun culture, whatever anybody wants to say. Those guns will be there. We could stop selling guns in America today, and 300 years from now, probably three-quarters of those guns are still going to be out there. So somehow we have to deal with attitudes in America. We have to deal with people who have anger management issues and who somehow see a gun as an equalizer. Does everybody have a right to defend themselves, defend their family, defend their home? Absolutely. But when that gun becomes an extension of your personality, maybe an extension of a challenged, troubled personality, that's when the problems start in this country. And unfortunately, too many people turn to a gun instead of their head to resolve a situation.
Clint Van Zandt's here. We're talking about George Zimmerman and some other high-profile cases in the news in a little bit. Of course, you have your law enforcement hat. Now let's put on your media hat, because you do that too. What about the coverage today for George Zimmerman compared to back then? It's going to be a little difficult to say that he's being treated unfairly now.
Well, I think so too, and I think that's part of the challenge. And, you know, we are so polarized in America. People line up, whether you're whether you're a liberal or a conservative, a Democrat, a Republican, whether you believe that, you know, race is an issue or not as an issue, whether you line up with Oprah and you suggest that anyone who has anything negative to say about the president is a racist, or whether, you know, I don't know what side people are going to line up. I wish we were totally colorblind. You know, when I was a kid, we grew up on black and white TV, and it was somewhat hard to, you know, somewhat differentiate who everybody was. But, you know, there's no question now as to someone's political leanings and their race. And I think I, like many, many, you know, whether we be whites or African Americans, we hate to see the race card be the first one that comes out of the deck every time. That was in the George Zimmerman case. That card came up so much, suggesting perhaps that young man was targeted because he was African American. Now, you know, if you go back to the case, there were allegations that Zimmerman patrolled that neighborhood, that he hadn't seen Trayvon Martin in the neighborhood before. We know that there were dozens of break-ins in that neighborhood by young teenagers that had taken place. We know you had to balance all that information, and I'm sure the jury did too in their consideration. But, you know, now when you see so much more of this guy's behavior, when you see the allegations against him, and when you see all the guns, shotguns, AK-47s, semi-automatic pistols, you know, is this someone who truly has a right to feel his life threatened? Or has each of those guns become an extension of a personality, maybe a sharp man's personality, that has now become, you know, elongated by the use of weapons? You know, the law enforcement, the courts, they take the guns away, they give them back, they take the guns away, they give them back again. One can only wonder what's going to happen to this guy down the road. Do we see another O.J. Simpson? Is he going to do something, again, far more stupid that's going to put him in jail? Is he going to confront somebody who's got a bigger gun than he is? But we know that this guy, for whatever the reason, is going to continue to be in the news. And as you suggest, the news is going to continue to follow him.
Absolutely. The story will go on and on. Another story you've been talking about lately in the media is Dr. Martin McNeil. Now, this is something right out of Hollywood. Share with my audience a little bit about the good doctor.
Yeah, this was, in fact, I was just on a Dr. Phil show yesterday. We spent a better part of an hour going over this story. As your listeners who are, you know, very adept at their knowledge of the criminal justice system will know, about 6 years ago, this doctor/lawyer, in essence, he had an MD degree and a law degree, living in Utah, practicing doctor, married to a knocked-down, you know, good-looking woman. He had 8 children with her. Something came about with this guy, and he allegedly as the jury was told, convinced his wife to have plastic surgery that at 50 she was starting to show her age. Boy, that scares me, Dana, at my age. But anyway, at 50 he thought she was starting to show her age, so he supposedly forced her to have plastic surgery, and then afterwards convinced the plastic surgeon, himself being an MD, obviously, that his wife was challenged, had problems sleeping, and so he put together this concoction of drugs and pills that would supposedly help her sleep. Well, she winds up, as the defense would tell you, she somehow fell in a bathtub and hit her head and drowned. As the prosecution and as Dr. McNeil's daughters felt, and as the jury found last Saturday, that he placed her after this concoction of drugs, he put her in the bathtub, probably held her head underwater. You know, this brings us back thinking of the Chicago police sergeant who was alleged, in fact, convicted of having done a similar type murder prior to that time. But anyway, McNeil supposedly murders his wife and gets away with it for a number of years. Initially, it's found that it was an accident, but McNeil's daughters really believe their father. Can you imagine that? The daughters having to intervene and saying, our father killed our mother. They so intervened and so hammered the criminal justice system that they brought charges against him, and he was just convicted. He now faces at least a 15-year-to-life sentence for first-degree murder for having murdered his wife in what he had supposedly told others he could commit, which would be the perfect crime. He had suggested prior to his wife's death that he could put together a concoction of pills and medicines and things that could take a life and then make it look like an accident. And then this guy, this is the same guy who is such a philanderer. He had multiple girlfriends on the side. This is the same guy who had been collecting money from the Veterans Administration for years, having forged documents suggesting that he had a bipolar disorder and therefore was due some type of compensation from the military. This is a guy who lied all of his life, and he finally took those lies and put them all together, and it spelled homicide, and in this case, the death of his wife.
Not unlike Drew Peterson, you mentioned, like you say, there's always a mistress involved. And you got to wonder where they, you know, put your profiler hat on now. What's with these guys? They'll go to the extreme of killing their wife to be with someone else. There's that narcissistic personality that's out there, just like OJ, that they can never do wrong. God, it makes you wonder how many are actually out there roaming the streets.
Or out there on the streets. Now, again, when I was on Dr. Phil the other day, he had the most recent mistress, a woman by the name of Gypsy Willis. Now, a reasonably nice woman, married, divorced, and then had taken up a relationship. I guess she met the good Dr. McNeil online. But, you know, we're talking to her on the show, and she's going through, you know, the background. They had been involved in identity theft together. They had stolen the identity of one of his daughters and then used it to move money from one bank account to another to further falsify the identity theft scam they were involved in. The day his wife was buried was the day they chose to use as a date of marriage on their forged marriage certificate. So I'm sitting there listening to this woman go through all this. And I said, you know, Dr. Phil, can I ask her a question? So he said, sure. I said, you know, Gypsy, you got to help me here. I said, I know you're on the hot seat. I know you feel like you're a victim. But let's see, you've got a guy who cheated on his wife with multiple girlfriends on the side, of which you were only one. He cheated on his 8 children. He cheated on his income tax. He cheated on the government. How in your wildest imagination could you ever believe that this guy would be loyal to you when he's never been loyal to anybody in your life, in his life? And, you know, she sat there and she looked at me and she started to tear up on the television program. Uh-huh. And she said, oh, that's a good question. And her answer was interesting because she said, you just want to believe someone sometime. And, you know, how many times have you and I and have your listeners seen this when you see somebody and they're lied to over and over again? But if it's a relationship, even a one-way relationship where a woman or a man thinks that the other person cares about them and is in love with them, and we allow that person to take us past common sense. We allow them to take us past the aha phenomena, which is, aha, I see what they're up to. They're only interest in this case, sleeping with his woman by and large was a concern. In fact, when his wife died, he takes his mistress, Gypsy, brings her into the household and identifies her as the babysitter for the children, while, in fact, she's sleeping with him in the bed that he had just shared with his wife a week or two before.
Wow.
I mean, you know, you start to look at low life, and this guy qualifies in a lot of those categories.
Absolutely. Clint Van Zandt's here. For about another 5 minutes, I would be remiss without talking about this case. And again, you've been in the media and discussing it. And it's about the marijuana dealer who, he lost a piece of his manhood. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, he did. It was, and you know, that's not funny. Those are the type of stories that make you and me and every other man and, you know, stand on our toes out there when you think about this. This is a story that... Again, we talked about on Dr. Phil's show the other day. He had a woman on the show, so supposedly she had become the roommate of a legal marijuana, a medical marijuana salesperson on the West Coast. So she had, as her terminology was roommate, she had moved into this guy's residence for one day, and the next day, they have three or four guys break into the house in a home invasion. They grab the woman out of bed. They grab the guy out of bed. They tie him up, and they're demanding money. See, now, as it turns out, these are men that this guy who sold the medical marijuana, he knew. He understood who they were. If you think back to that terrible story in Florida a couple of years ago where that wealthy couple who had about 15 children,
sure.
They had a home invasion, and the invaders came in, and they thought there would be a safe full of money, and they shot and tortured the husband and then killed him and killed the wife in front of all their adopted children.
Right.
This similar type scenario, they grab this guy, they tie him up, and then they take a rubber hose, and they proceed to just beat the you-know-what out of him, then demanding that he tell where the money that he makes from selling the medical-grade marijuana, where that money is in the house. Well, the next thing these bad guys do, who are trying to pass themselves off as Mexican drug lords, is load this guy and this woman in this van and drive him out into the middle of the desert, continuing to beat him with a rubber hose. And then they make, you know, one of the worst threats that, you know, as a man you can hear, that you either tell us or we're going to cut off your manhood.
Right.
And this guy says, hey, there are no money, no hidden. And they think it's in the desert. So the next thing you know, they take this guy and they take his genitals out and they take a knife and they not only cut off his penis, but the guy who does it sticks it in his pocket and says, I'm taking it with me to make sure it can't be sewn back on.
Jeez.
Now, as horribly tragic, terrible, monstrous story as this is, of course, this woman is sitting there having to listen and witness and wondering what they're going to do to her next. But the next thing these guys do, they throw both the victim that they've now mutilated and the woman out of the back of the van and drive away. She walks about a mile and a half to a highway just at the time a state trooper or a deputy is driving down the road. So they're able to get back and get to this guy and get him to the hospital, and they're able to rescue both. Three of the suspects were caught in the United States. The fourth had fled somewhere, I believe, to Eastern Europe, and the FBI just picked him up about 2 weeks ago. So everyone responsible is now in custody, is now going to be held responsible for this. But, just the worst type of story, and it just shows... Some people will go, there is no limit, no place they won't go for money. And when you are able to commit that kind of act, you know, it's probably, I guess it makes me think even tonight. I was watching some television shows, and they were showing what apparently in the United States are groups, young groups of African-American kids that are roaming up and down streets looking for Caucasians, either men or women, and sucker punching them, knocking them out. Sometimes they call it polar bear hunting. And it's become kind of this horrible game across country where gang after gang is looking for people. They walk up to them, they sucker punch them, and they've had videos of these people being knocked out, knocked to the street. A woman told tonight how she was punched in the mouth as she was driving a bicycle, and these kids are thinking it's funny. You know, we have lost this sense of common sense, at least, you know, in this country, to do things like that and to think it's funny. You know, I guess the only thought is, what if that was me, or what if that was one of my kids? Would I want that to be done to them? And those thoughts don't even seem to permeate these kids. I mean, they're, you know, we're missing an element here that allows people to commit violence as either a form of problem-solving, conflict resolution, or just pure fun to commit an act of violence against another human being.
And then brag about it by putting it on the Internet. It's just, it's incredible, Clint. And just when you think you've heard something, you hear another story, and it makes you shake your head. Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Good to be with you. Good night.
Talk to you. Bye-bye. That's Clint Van Zandt. He's a retired FBI agent and a good friend of the program. And you'll see Clint on NBC, MSNBC, Dr. Phil, all the cable shows. He's a good analyst when it comes to high-profile cases in the news. We're going to be back here in just a minute with Susan Bartlestone. She's a nationally respected domestic violence and crime prevention specialist. With the holidays coming, this is a sad time of year for a lot of people, and the domestic violence statistics go through the roof. So we're going to talk about that and many other things here on the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. My next guest, Susan Bartlestone, is a nationally respected domestic violence and crime prevention specialist. She's the former host of the award-winning Crime Prevention 101 radio show and chairperson of the domestic violence initiatives of the prestigious New York Women's Agenda. Her articles and tips have been featured in such media as Yahoo Homepage, MainStreet.com, Time Out New York, and Self Magazine. Her domestic violence work has been honored by the UN Women NYC and the Virginia Gildersleeve International Fund. It's always a pleasure, and always a pleasure. This is the first time to have Susan on the show. Susan, welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dan. I'm a big fan of Scared Monkeys. I've been listening as much as I can for many years, so it's a thrill for me.
No, we're going to talk domestic violence and some crime prevention stuff here in a minute or two. And there's a crimeprevention101.com safety tips, the links in the show notes, and we'll go through those. We always have Domestic Violence Awareness Month in October, November. We've done plenty of shows over the years with many different topics on domestic violence. And I just had Clint Van Zandt on, and we were talking about George Zimmerman.
And my goodness.
There's a case where, of course, the first time the media grabbed this story, it was all over, and it was politicized and race involved and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, now there's another case, and actually two or three previous to this, and he's been arrested and in the shotgun and all that. But in my opinion, what the media is missing is they're focusing on the person, George Zimmerman. They're not focusing on the big problem of domestic violence. This was a domestic situation. He pulled a gun on his girlfriend. God only knows what else happened. Am I wrong when I say that they focus too much on the person and not the outer lying or the big problem, like in this case, domestic violence?
Well, yeah, you know, the incident that he was involved with has overshadowed everything. So it was the racial component of what happened. That's always going to be the larger issue with the press. But yeah, I think that the fact that there's been two domestic violence incidents since that since the trial that I'm aware of, it's indicative of this man's personality.
Well,
and you know, unfortunately, there wasn't a good law. There was no law to convict him on what he did. That was why he got off. It wasn't that he was innocent. And this just points to the fact that this man has a violent nature.
And again, the big story, as far as I'm concerned, of course, they're going back and did the jury get it wrong last time and all that sort of stuff. And yes, it should be talked about, is domestic violence. Now, we're getting into the holiday season. You know as well as I do, this is a bad time of year. The statistics go through the roof. Thanksgiving through Christmas, whatever. Not that any other time during the year is good, but this is a bad time of year. Let's talk about, you have an article here called 10 Ways to Make It Meaningful. And let's talk about some of those tips. In particular, the first one, don't mind your own business.
Can I just stop you there quickly? Because I think that... Some people in the audience, in your listeners, may not fully understand what we're talking about when we talk about domestic violence. Look, let me lay a little bit of the foundation, if you don't mind.
By all means.
To make sure we're on the same page, and then those tips are really down to earth and practical. So I'd love to go over them. But most people think of domestic violence when they hear it, they only think of physical violence.
Right.
Kind of like what George Zimmerman, pulling guns, you know, pushing and shoving. That's the most common face of it, but that is not all that domestic violence is. Domestic violence takes many forms. And I think that the largest category with it involves no physical violence at all. It's called domestic abuse, and it's emotional abuse. Putting someone down, and usually it is a woman, so I do refer to, I usually say her, but I want to acknowledge that there are men victims, and there are a smaller percentage, much smaller, but that they're there, and it's significant, and they're starting to have places to get help. So I don't want any men to feel that I don't understand that, because I do, but mostly it is women. And this emotional abuse is constant, and it's done in private, but it's also done in public, putting someone down constantly, criticizing them, humiliating them, making them feel guilty. This may be the largest category of domestic abuse that there is, and it is abuse, and you try living with someone that's constantly putting you down, that's constantly criticizing you, that's humiliates you, that tears you down all the time. Very disempowering, and it's very sad, and it's very difficult to live with that kind of person. A lot of times, domestic violence doesn't have violence, but it has the threat of violence. Punching walls, having temper tantrums, violent temper tantrums, hitting things, throwing things, abusing a pet, something like that, intimidation. If you don't do what I say, I will kill you.
Right.
That kind of thing, where it may not have the violence in it, but it's the threat of violence, and it's the belief that the violence will be there. Another component, and this is what makes it work, a lot of times the men will isolate the woman or the abuser will isolate the person from friends, from family. She may not be allowed to work. If she works, she may have to turn her paycheck over to him so that she's dependent on him. Keeping her away from resources that might help her, that kind of thing. Threatening to take the children if she leaves. All of these things are what makes up domestic abuse. It's power and control. And that's part of what keeps that person traumatized. And after a while, they get to believe that they really are worthless and that they deserve the treatment that they're getting. That's one of the known things that tends to happen over time.
Susan Bartlestone's here. We're talking about domestic violence. Susan, what they used to call the cycle of violence.
Exactly.
Things like a honeymoon phase and all of that. It's great to be educated, both law enforcement, the courts, the prosecutors, the victims, and even the accused in these cases. But what about, and we're going to go now to your 10 ways to make it meaningful.
Okay.
What about those that live next door, the family members. And one of the first things you have there is something that you say, don't mind your own business. So what do you mean by that?
Exactly. Well, a lot of times we see something in our friends' relationships that make us concerned.
Right.
We may notice this constant criticism. We may notice the bullying. We may see it in our, it may not be a friend, maybe a coworker. Maybe we see it in the neighbor next door. If you know somebody whose relationship concerns you, let them know you're there. Don't mind your business. Now, this is not easy. And that's why in the tip sheet that I have, I give a link to the National Domestic Violence Hotline website. They have a whole tip sheet that will tell you how you can approach somebody that you are concerned about so that you do it empathetically and you do it safely. You've got the link right there. Things like don't be afraid to let the person know that you are concerned for their safety. Don't be judgmental. It goes step by step, showing you how to approach somebody the most productive way to let them know that you're there and that maybe they will reach out and ask for help or ask you to help them help themselves, kind of thing.
No.
So that's one of the important things. Don't mind your business. Don't turn away if you see it.
Education, like I mentioned, is so important. And we've always said that educating the younger we start to educate, the better it is. So you have a good relationship with your wife, but you have teenage kids in the house. Boys,
yep.
Girls. What about that? Because you have the parent that will say, I always treated my wife fine. I always treated my husband fine. So this isn't a learned behavior. But what can we do with the kids and to teach them? Because they're going to be out on their own pretty quick, or maybe they're experiencing something now.
Dana, I'm not sure what it's like in Canada. I expect it's similar. But here in the United States, we have a terrible problem with dating violence on young kids, teens, tweens that are dating, 12-year-old, 11-year-old, going to the movies. There is an epidemic of violence in these relationships. It is so important if you've got a teen or a tween or a grandkid that you got to talk to them as soon as possible about what a healthy relationship is. And there's a terrific website, Love Is Not Abuse. They have loveisnotabuse.com would be the website. They have guidelines that you can sit down with your kid and look at these guidelines together, and it talks about what's acceptable in a relationship. Love Should Not Hurt. That's another website that's very good. You've got to get educated so you can get your teens educated so that they will not accept this in a relationship. If you can get them before they get too old, you can stop the pattern of violence. And if they've observed it in you, or if they've observed it around them, they might be more susceptible to it as well. So it's really important. Now that's pretty much for the girls. There's a terrific website that you can check out for the boys. It's called Men Can Stop Rape, and they are a group that does programs in high schools and colleges. They've also done things in the armed forces here. They were commissioned by the armed forces to do programs dealing with violence against women in service. There are all sorts of guidelines, and there are clubs that they have. They're all over the United States. If you can get your boy child involved with this, and look up the guidelines and talk about how men use their strength not to hurt, but to help. It's a terrific program, and I hope everyone that has kids will take a look at these websites and take a look at these resources. They're extremely helpful if you've got children.
Another one, Susan, is addressing domestic violence in the workplace. And this is not only for workers, but for employers too. What can we do to help in the workplace?
And this is also So this is a billion-dollar problem. Domestic violence in the workplace costs employers a lot of money, and most of them are not prepared to deal with it. They don't even realize that they have to deal with it, especially if it's a smaller kind of workplace. And you always hear these sad stories here about an abuser showing up at someone's workplace and shooting his wife or girlfriend, partner, and anyone else that comes in the way.
Yep.
So too many lives, billions of dollars are lost every year because employers are unprepared. And there's a group that I know of. It's called Employers Against Domestic Violence, and they help all size workplace prepare to deal with domestic violence. They give policy guidelines. They do good education programs. They will have speakers. Some of them can come out to talk to the company and prepare and have safety policies so that everyone in the workplace is protected. And by the way, I know in this country, you cannot be fired from your job for domestic violence problems. If you have to miss work going to court, if you come in bruised or whatever, you have to take too much time off. You cannot be fired for that. And a lot of people don't know that. But they do have legal protection. Of course, they're going to have to go to court and fight about it, but
right.
But they are protected here under the law. Is that the case in up where you are?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Good. And there's also another program that I like called The Business of Me, and they help employers start support groups for people who are domestic violence survivors or any kind of traumatic abuse, rather. So these are very cost-effective programs, The Business of Me. I happen to know the person very well that started that, and it's a terrific program that people should take a look at also. If you're a business person or you're someone in the workplace that's got this kind of an issue that you're dealing with, check out Employers Against Domestic Violence and The Business of Me, two really good programs.
And these tips and others can be, again, found at crimeprevention101.com. Now, I mentioned I mentioned at the start of the interview, Susan, that, of course, at this time of year, with Christmas and the holidays and whatever you celebrate or believe in, it seems like the stress is more and more, whether it's financial or, you know, addictions can get involved, alcoholism, you name it. What about some tips for the family to have a happy and safe holiday season?
Well, if you're involved in the domestic violence situation, and by the way, alcohol is the role of alcohol is misunderstood in. The whole domestic violence and abuse issue. Here we don't say anymore that this is the reason that men become abusive. They do it because they can.
Absolutely.
And they would do it whether they drink or they don't drink. But clearly, if alcohol is a factor, and abusive alcohol isn't good in a marriage, even if they're not beating you up when they drink. It's not good in any way. So there's a tendency to drink too much during the holidays as well. That's something that you want to watch if you can control the situation. What you might want to do, though, is work out a plan beforehand. If you know that this is likely to happen, and whether it's during the holidays or not, you want to work out a safety plan before and after if you have to get out of that abusive relationship. And there's a lot of literature around. One of the things that I recommend to people, just get some advice, get some education. There are a number of places that you can go to that will help you prepare. Domestic violence organizations, something called the Family Justice Center, which is one of the biggest advancements in helping people with domestic violence issues. I know in New York, where I am, there's four Family Justice Centers in New York City. I know they have them in Canada as well, and have them across the United States and in various places in Europe as well. If you can get to a family justice center to help make out a safety plan, that's something that you want to do. If you can get to a domestic violence organization, and they will keep these things confidential. You don't have to worry that you will be found out. They won't call your home. They know exactly how to work it out so that you are safe. There's also, I like smartphone apps that can help in a personal security system. There's something called MyForce that is really good. They were a sponsor of my radio show, so I know them very well. They can help in terms of if you need immediate help. It's like a, I don't know if they have OnStar where you are, but it's like a concierge service. When you switch this app on your phone, they can see and they can hear. And if you're in trouble, they will call the police, and they will know exactly where to send you. It's MyForce.com. It's a terrific program. There's also something called My Security app. These are things that you can do that will help you. Another thing that you might want to do, in terms of ensuring safety, this is more when you're out of the situation than in the situation, you want to prepare scanned video documentation. It's also technically called evidentiary abuse affidavit. Where you scan in, you can use your cell phone camera, and you testify as to what's going on. If I should disappear, if I am murdered, if I become incapacitated, it is because John Doe. You put his picture, social security number, contact information, and then you scan in any documentation that you have, police reports, hospital reports, photos. Put it into a computer, download it onto a flash drive, make a couple of copies, give it to a few of your friends. Let the person know that you've prepared this documentation. It can serve as prevention. If not, it preserves evidence of abuse for the criminal justice system. And there's a terrific book that I recommend for anyone who's looking to make themselves a little safer. It's called Time's Up. A guide on how to leave and survive abusive and stalking relationships. Time's Up, it's called. It's a tremendous resource in terms of keeping yourself safe.
The late Susan Murphy Milano and I were very close.
Correct.
And she's
one of my heroes.
She and I did many programs together on domestic violence over the years, and we miss her greatly. But one thing that Sue always said on the show is that domestic violence is 24/7, 365 days a year. It's not just during the holidays. It's not just this. And we need to spend more time. We need to talk more. We need to do more programs. You've done them. I've done them. They don't get to, like I mentioned with Zimmerman, the focus is on him. There should be a focus on domestic violence right now, or violence between man and woman, whatever, violence with firearms, you name it. And it doesn't have to be physical. It could be verbal. And it just could go on and on. Susan, our time is almost up. I really appreciate it. How can the folks learn more about you and what you have to offer?
My website is crimeprevention101.com. I'm also on Facebook, Susan Bartlestone. And I'm on LinkedIn as Susan Bartlestone. And people email me solutions@fightsafe.com, and I answer people's questions. I make referrals for all over the world, and I feel so grateful that I have a chance to talk about it with you, Dana. And I hope that if anyone listening needs some help, don't hesitate. I'm here.
Absolutely, and we'll do more shows like this, Susan. Thank you for coming on.
I would love to, Dana. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, that's Susan Bartlestone talking about domestic violence. I sat down earlier today with, and in fact, the show is on History Channel tonight in up here in Canada, one of the stars of a program called Ice Pilots, NWT. Mikey McBrien. Ice Pilots has been on History Channel for the past 5 years. It follows the adventures of Buffalo Airways in Yellowknife Northwest Territories. And this airline uses World War II era planes to transport people, to transport goods, and to basically keep the North going. I really enjoy the program, and every so often we do a little segment with a what I call real reality TV star. And here's Mikey McBrien from Buffalo Airways. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. I'm Dana Pretzer. If you sit back and watch the History Channel now and then, like I do, or more now than then, you'll know that the Ice Pilots is one of the more popular programs on the air. And I'm very happy to have Mikey McBrien from Buffalo Airways on the show. And, of course, Ice Pilots, NWT. How are you, Mikey?
Oh, doing good. Thanks for having me on here.
Welcome to Weyburn, Saskatchewan. Now, Arnie Schrader, a big loss to you guys, I'm sure. I happen to be flipping around the channels November 11th, and there's the Dam Busters show on. And I thought to myself, why the hell haven't I had somebody from that show on the program? Seeing Arnie was from here and how popular he was with you guys. What did Arnie Schrader mean to you guys at Buffalo Airways?
Well, Arnie Schrader, he was really the godfather when it comes to the piloting. He was the one that taught everybody. Arnie had a marvelous career. He was at his twilight of his career when the show started. So what you saw there was him at the version of passing along all the information to the young pilots.
You know, reenacting the Dam Busters, how big of a challenge was that for you guys?
Oh, that took about 6 months of work for, 4 seconds. And so that one was really a craziness. Like, so much things had to come together. Originally, it wasn't for the Ice Pilot show. It was for a documentary for the BBC,
right.
Which was pretty good. It was award-winning. The Ice Pilots guys did film it for a part of the episode. So it was like, tip of the iceberg. What you see on TV was just the end result of 8-9 months of solid work.
Mikey McBrien's here from Buffalo Airways, and of course the Ice Pilots television show, which by the way is on tonight, all new episode on History Channel. Tell us a little bit about the typical episode, Mikey. How long does it take to shoot the episode, say, that we'll see tonight?
Well, it's kind of a weird thing, because we're not scripted, we're not coerced into really doing too much stuff. Like, I always do something stupid, but the company as a whole is basically you're getting a voyeuristic view, because the camera guys just hang out and start shooting when stuff is interesting, and shooting a lot of times when stuff isn't interesting. So we usually shoot from October to July.
Okay.
And to get all that, 5,000 hours of footage when you get all the time lapses and all the GoPros and all that stuff. And you have to cut that down to 13 hours, or not even 13 hours, because, you got commercials. So no one really knows how long it takes to shoot an episode, because it's just a constant thing, right? It's not like, okay, we're going to make episode 6 today. No, you just never know what is going to, at the beginning of the day, what's going to end up. We've shot for 3 weeks and not even got, 1 second of useful footage. On the flip side, you could shoot for an hour and get, almost an entire episode.
Buffalo Airways, it's a unique airline, the type of planes that you fly. Tell the folks a little bit about Buffalo Airways and your dad.
Well, Buffalo Airways was started in May of 1970, so we're 43 years. And my dad's been there since the beginning, of course. He's the founder. So back when we started, we weren't different. Of course, it was a long time before I was born, but we weren't different. Everyone was like us. And then, like my father said, one day he woke up and he was the last, and sort of like a Jurassic Park, Yellowknife is like that lost island full of dinosaurs with these aircraft. For all bunch of reasons. People are like, why don't you modernize and stuff? But, there's a lot of modern airplanes here in Yellowknife, and it takes modern type of people. So, you get modern airplanes, we'll be out of a job, because that's really all we know is this stuff. But You know, it's sometimes when you go to work every day and you just work with the same equipment, the world changes and you kind of stay the same, and I kind of like that.
Mikey McBrien's here from Ice Pilots on History Channel. By the way, tonight, all new episode. And, of course, Buffalo Airways. You can check out their website at buffaloairways.com. All right, we're back with Mikey McBrien from Buffalo Airways and the Ice Pilots television program on history, by the way, that airs live tonight. Mikey, the show, how did it get started? Your dad, you know, he comes across as kind of a grouchy old guy sometimes on the air. I hope he's not listening to me. I'll be in big trouble. Does he like the cameras following him around like that?
Well, of course not. As you can tell from his demeanor in the show, no, he doesn't really care for the cameras too much, but he tolerates them. And what that does is create, an interesting perspective. You know, most television shows, I'd name a few, but, you know, publicists hate it when I name television shows.
Sure.
But most of the protagonists are camera shameless, like myself. And to have a main character who really doesn't want to be on TV adds a whole dimension to it, and you can kind of see the realism in that. He is exactly how he is, but a lot of times the show doesn't show the nice side, which is most of the time, but, sometimes you get what you get.
I believe that. Let's talk a little bit about the Lego project. Tell us about it. I've looked at it, godc3.com. What's that all about?
Yeah, well, it's if you guys remember, if you watch Ice Pulse a year or so back, we were part of Legoland, and my father and I were immortalized in two Lego guys, like 4 foot, you know, Lego guys they built out of for us. We're the first characters, or first actual people to be made into Lego characters at Legoland. That wasn't, you know, Spider-Man or the Hulk or something like that. And so that put me on the track of wanting to create my own Lego set. In dealing with Lego, it's hugely expensive, but I found the back way to do it is a project called Lego Kusu. And it's Kusu is a Japanese word meaning like a wish. And long story short is I teamed up with a designer in Europe, and we built a Lego DC-3 out of about 1,400 pieces. And we submitted it to Lego, and they approved it to go on to the next phase, which is, you know, the public. And definitely need everyone's support to go check it out. I got it on godc3.com. And, yeah, you go in there, I need to get 10,000 votes. And once I get that much, it goes to the Lego review board. And if it passes their quality standards, you know, we can get a Lego DC-3 to every kid who wants one.
So without spoiling it, what can we expect in the upcoming episodes of Ice Pilots?
The upcoming episodes of Ice Pilots is, you know, a lot of times I watch it fresh just like everyone else because, you know, for shooting for so long, you know, it all kind of blurs together a bit, but... you know, there's always the craziness, and I always enjoy watching it, almost like everyone else, because we sit down on Wednesday nights and watch it, and a lot of times it's a surprise, because, like anybody, like kind of mentioned, oh, yeah, what did you do last January 17th,
yeah.
Right? And that's kind of the neat thing, is the show becomes fresh to me as well. And, you know, that's kind of a backwards answer, because...
Yeah.
I haven't read the synopsis of what's coming up, but I know the episode that's airing tonight is we're getting the Electra back in the air, which was, if you guys remember last year, it did a gear-up landing on the runway, which was about only lasted about, you know, 10 seconds, but that was about $1.8 million worth of damage.
Jeez.
And like a Phoenix raising from the ashes, it's out tonight. Tonight's episode shows us getting it back to work.
Right.
And another thing, too, is my buddy Will from Brisbane, Australia, shows up wanting to work for Buffalo. You know, a guy never seen snow, throws himself right in the deep freeze. So you can see a total fish out of water, almost like an Aussie out of water. And that's kind of the Cole's notes of tonight's episode.
Well, it's a fascinating program. It's called Ice Pilots NWT. It's on the History Channel on Wednesdays. Mikey McBrien, thank you. I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me. And go Rough Riders if that gets me more viewers.
Yeah, take care. That's on Sunday. We'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye. That's Mikey McBrien from Buffalo Airways, and it's one of History Channel's better programs. We'll be right back. And I want to thank all my guests this evening, Clint Van Zandt, Susan Bartlestone, and Mikey McBrien from the Ice Pilots television show. We'll see you again here real soon on the Dana Pretzer Show. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.